It's Dear Instructional Designer, episode 43. Hey everybody, and welcome back to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. This season, we're digging into real projects and breaking them apart to see what makes them work. This episode, I'm sitting down with Jolt Ola. You may know him as the guy on Twitter who does super awesome stuff. I actually met him through the Articulate forums, and he helped me out when I was first dipping my toes into building games to integrate a game with storyline. Jolt is an Articulate guru and combines his knowledge of programming to really extend and push that program beyond its limits, which is one of the reasons he's one of my heroes. But Jolt is more than just a developer. He has a lot of experience with that whole messy client relationship piece and what it takes to build an effective learning experience. We discuss a couple of projects of his that have great lessons for all of us newbies. Without further ado, let's break it down. Jolt, before we dig in, tell us a little bit about your journey so far in instructional design.
Sure. Thanks, Christina. And I'm happy to be here on this podcast series. So originally, I'm from Hungary. I grew up there and I decided early on that I want to be either a stand-up comedian or a programmer. And I ended up in between, and instructional design is perfectly in the middle. I had 2 degrees. I did a programming engineering degree first. And then I realized that as much as I love computers, I love people too. I did English teaching as well. So the two, I think, was the perfect balance for me to start creating learning and getting into instructional design back a good 20 years ago.
Nice. Okay. So it seems like programming would help a lot, but of course, there are also all of these rapid e-learning tools. Do you find that you still use your programming skills?
Definitely. I think programming, and I know there's a lot of effort out there to have the new generation actually program and code. But there's a difference between the programming and coding. Mm-hmm. Because with programming, you actually learn critical thinking, analysis, a way of approaching things and troubleshooting. And that it doesn't matter what language you're using, what programming and code you write. Nowadays, there are applications, but you don't need to write a line of code. You just have to program the application. So that's the important part of it. And I'm still using that method of thinking.
Yeah. Okay. Makes a lot of sense. All right. So this season on the show, we're focusing on the nitty-gritty of ID and talking about specific processes for problem solving, which is great that you said that. So it was a perfect segue. So let's sort of dig into the project that we're talking about today. I know you had a couple of projects in mind, but can you sort of briefly describe one or two of these and sort of the context surrounding it? What were the challenges that you were trying to solve?
Yeah, so one of them was what you call a typical call for help from a stakeholder that they need training right away. It's an application training, how to use a website, basically fill out a form for ordering services in a company. Their enrolling rate, internal rate was very low, and the site was not really user-friendly, and they need some kind of training, sounded like a Captivate type of application training. So that's one of the projects I want to get into because it shows how critical thinking and asking the right questions takes you to a solution that was not even what they're asked for. And the other one that we might want to get into is a billing system transfer training. So they're upgrading a billing system and there are old codes that everybody knows inside out and that the new codes are coming. And the question was, how do we train those people quickly, efficiently, so the customer service still stays at a high level, but there's just the two systems going to be overlap a little and then we drop the old one and they need to know all these codes. What's the best way to memorize all these codes? So these two are, I think, very common system related, problems, but it shows how you end up with a solution that was not really what was requested originally.
Awesome. So had there been, in either case, a solution in place that was need of an update, or did you just sort of, here's the problem we're trying to solve, and we're just going to take it from beginning to end with this new problem?
So in the first case, they had training, and what they requested was a step-by-step version of that. So we showed them exactly how to fill up the form. The problem with that was that digging into what this whole thing looks like is that there was already a step-by-step training in terms of like, you know, context-sensitive help kind of thing on the site. So that's where our conversation started with the stakeholders of, are you really requesting this? Is what is the real problem? Why? And a lot of why questions asking about the question. So that in that case, there was no training previously. And the other one was brand new since it was an upgrade. So they had training for the old one. They didn't know nothing for the new one yet because it was brand new and they needed the transition, maybe like a month or two time period, something that solves their problem.
Okay. So you talked about asking a lot of why questions. So what kinds of questions were those and how did you ask? I think a lot of times, particularly with us newbies, it sort of seems like you don't want to come off as the black hat who's sort of challenging people. But there are questions that you need to ask. So what does that look like?
So actually, early in my days, I often fell into the trap of really wanting to know what the request was so I can create what they wanted, until I actually learned about action mapping. And if you don't know what Kathy Moore's action mapping is, you should Google now, stop listening to this and go and read about it, because I think it's going to save your life. But anyway, so what happens in the first case is that you need to figure out what they're asking for. Is a solution that they really need, or is there something behind it? So the why questions that we asked, why did they think? So their problem was that the enrollment rate is low, and their solution or conclusion was that they need a training on how to use the form. And so our question was, why do you think, what else could contribute to that problem that it's low? And then that kind of stopped them going one direction. Started thinking about it as well. It's because we thought it's because they don't know how to use it, but it could be something else too. So we started to think about what is the environment like. Why is it? Maybe it's that the whole application is just clumsy. So one, it could be that people don't even know where to go. It could be that they don't know how to use the form, or it could be kind of like a motivational issue of they don't feel like they should do that. And digging into all these problems in different directions, we kind of landed on the problem that we approach this from a very different perspective. It's not that the form is hard, is that we need to create a vision, some kind of emotional motivation for them to even just go there. And that was the kind of like the clue of, what if we start somewhere else to drive people there? And there is these step-by-step instructions anyway. So if I really wanted to, I can follow that, but we have to motivate people first to get there.
And do you receive any kind of pushback when you're asking all of those why questions? And if you do, like, how do you handle that?
So I think it depends on how you approach that. If you come up with a 400 question list and start asking one by one, you're going to get pushback because all they want is just get this training done.
Right.
So what we usually do is, and again, it's like the commonly action mapping process, is that you bring the stakeholders, SMEs together in one call or one better face-to-face and just walk through this process. Let's establish the call. What is the goal for that? What is the business goal? And agree on that first. And then figuring out what people should do to achieve that goal. And then get into the nitty-gritty of, okay, what do you think people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And that brings up a lot of details there. So it's kind of an exploratory guided tour discovery with them rather than asking rapid fire questions. And it all depends on then answers, their attitudes. It's a facilitation. It's not just a fill out this form for me kind of approach.
Right, right. And we'll definitely have a link to Kathy Moore's action mapping. I discovered it as well and I love it. But I know that when I was in higher ed, it was difficult to talk about action mapping. And Kathy Moore herself says that action mapping is sort of developed for the business space. Had there ever been any situation where action mapping maybe was less appropriate? And I'm thinking specifically about higher ed, where there sort of is no business goal.
Without the business goal, I'm mostly in the last 15 years, I was in the business side.
Mm-hmm.
For the more like academic side, the problem is that if you do not have a goal that is measurable and in some way associated with actions, then you end up with, okay, what should they know? And there is no way for an social designer at that point to win that war.
Mm-hmm.
You just basically do what you're told because everything is going to be important, and you end up with this huge, giant body of knowledge that nobody knows what to do with. And then we fall into the trap of creating courses for its sake and then just leave it there somewhere and it gets rusty because nobody updates it.
Mm. Yeah, excellent point. And there are higher ed specific models. I know I went in with this action mapping thing and it was sort of hard to translate sometimes. I got it done, but it was difficult. So that it was interesting. Back to the projects that we were discussing, were there any criteria or constraints that you needed to sort of work around?
Oh, absolutely. In the business, there's always one, and which is a combination of time and money, because it had to be done yesterday and it had to be cheap because we didn't have much resources at that point. So obviously these two go hand in hand and create this crisis situation where training is always the very last step of a project. And although everything can slip, training is not, because that's the last step before rollout.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to be smart. And that was, I think, part of it, how we approached that. We told them, like, we could create something that helps, and it takes time to create a good step-by-step instructions and simulation. And it might come later if we need it, but let's try something else first that's quick, very different approach, and it might help so we don't need the more expensive, more time resource demanding approach. So that's how we came up with a little story that we would create to kind of affect the emotional part of their brains.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So the solution you chose in the end for this one project was to focus on motivation, and you created a video. What drew you to that specific choice?
So based on the restriction, it had to be quick and it had to be comparatively cheap. What we use GoAnimate, and we use the very simple whiteboarding type of approach, and focused on the story itself. So the story had to be emotionally engaging enough, because we didn't put like 3D and all that extra stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we created, it was a simple story of someone getting hired. This was a feel-good story of someone getting hired, going to the organization, get all the support, and then they can sign up. That was the sudden message of sign up for these services. And what we wanted to portray is the very end, when they enjoy these services, friends come over, watch the game, and this is what drives people there to get the services, which for the company was essential, because these are customer service people that have to know the product inside out to help.
Okay, so the video was to motivate people to sign up for the services. Were there people like in company employees, or were they customers?
It was internal company employees, kind of like a discounted rate of getting TV, internet, and all the products that they're supporting.
Gotcha.
And they should know that inside out in order to, help others, or even just suggest or recommend those solutions. That's why we came up with this woman was the character who moves. She has a cat and she moves into the new house. So we kind of added those products one by one by one. And at the end, lots of people come over and have this party going on. And with the stakeholder, we had a couple of very iterative approach of let's review as quickly as we can live. And what was funny is that, as usually, when you go through a project, you get all kinds of textual, you just change the can to yes and make it more,
mm-hmm.
longer, shorter, blah, 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 all of text before you even get to anything you see. This was completely opposite, because we had the drawings done first, and then we figure out what minimal information we should add textual that they read, because it was the story that should drive it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we ended up with is very interesting because they liked the story so much that they didn't really want it to change it, except for two things, which made our life a little bit hard. Because one was, there was this rule in this book that you have to read kind of when you join the company and sign. And the rule was that they cannot give these equipment out to others, because obviously it wouldn't work anyway, but you're not allowed to. It's yours, and it has to be your house. And they wanted to add this rule into this feel-good story.
Right.
So this is where the instructional design comes in. So what we make sure we have to do is not asking those questions of what exactly you want me to do, but why you want me to do that. So we got to the point of asking those why questions. Just tell me more about it. Why is it important? How is it important? They want to make sure that the people remember it, because it's in the book, but it's somewhere and they don't remember that. And they often break it because they don't remember that. So we concluded that our problem is not that we need giant letters red somewhere flashing that don't do that. They want to remember this rule after the story. So we had to be something emotional. Mm-hmm. That was one of the remarks. The other one was a very funny, and again, it's relationship building with the stakeholders, is that one of them mentioned like why we have a cat in this story, because she has a dog. I was like, okay, we can change the cat to dog, but I don't know. Does it really matter? It's like, no, I was just joking. So what we did was we sat down, it's like, how can we solve this problem of adding something serious into this story that makes sense and remember? So we introduced the dog, actually with the same name as the stakeholder's dog. And the dog wanted to borrow this equipment. And Kat asked the owner whether she can give the equipment to her friend. And there was a little funny scene, added maybe 20 seconds to the story. But it was memorable because it was funny that the dog would take a friend, dog comes over and I want to borrow the equipment and he's not allowed to because the book says blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It felt like really well in the story. It didn't stand out and people loved it. And they remember that because it was, so funny that the dog wants to, borrow the equipment.
Awesome. And yeah, that really does show that sometimes you can compromise, but make it work for you. But also build that relationship and say, hey, we gave you what you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so what about with the other project, the billing project? What solution did you choose for that one?
So the other project was nothing like that. There was no good and feel and happiness in it. It was a stressful enrollment of a brand new billing system. And it was region by region. So it wasn't like a one-time event. It was about 15 regions, one by one, rolling into this new billing system. So they had old codes that they knew inside out, their very quick billing system, and then the new ones coming. So there was a time period for each region, a month or so, when they had the old and the new at the same time, and they had to match the old one to the new one. They couldn't use the old ones anymore. They have to know how they connect the old and new. It sounds like a matching pattern kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what originally they wanted to do is create a training that teaches them how to match the old code and the new code. So our question is, again, how do you anticipate this material used? Like, do you really think that people sit down for 15 minutes and remember 400 code for the time period of a month?
Right.
And then as gradually they're using the new ones, obviously they don't need this anymore. But it sounded like it's a hard case to bring out a memorization, whatever engine that would be, to memorize all these codes suddenly in 15 minutes or so. So what we ended up with is not even training. What we ended up with is going out asking about this whys and how it's going to happen, is that we concluded that what they really need is they need a tool that they type in the old code and the new pops up, or type the new and the old pops up. And this crutch can take them through this month until they kind of practiced it so much that now they can use it by memory. So what we created is literally used one of these originally planned game engine, which is like an FAQ type of engine that we killed. So we just loaded those codes for each region and they used it as a performance support tool. Literally, there was no training for that particularly. They were on the phone with the customer. They pull up the account and I see the old codes. They just plugged in the code and it pops up, here's the new code. And they use the new code or vice versa. And after a month, they just stopped using this because they just get used to the new version. But it had to be used daily, constantly, on every call to get there. So it literally, the training was on the job, performance support, and nothing around memorization.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. They need a lookup table. So it almost, it makes me wonder why memorization was sort of first and foremost in their mind in the first place. What do you think?
It's because I think, especially in the business, we taught our stakeholders about all the rules that we kind of follow as templates. So we tell them, is this something they need to know? Oh, yes, they need to know it. Okay, so then we have to have action verbs in the learning objectives like recall and list and match and whatever. Mm. And then we make sure that we put like a game in it that they can practice. And I know that's it. Originally, the thinking doesn't start with what's the business issue, what happens before the training, if there's a training at all, and after the training, and how is it used in context. We're focusing on what kind of learning strategy we're going to use. And I know it's exciting because this is the bread and butter of how to approach that. But we need to see that in context of how do we support the business the best way. Now, that also comes with the fact that you have to know what's available out there rather than just templates and learning tools. Because in this case, I was doing the calls, I was working on with the stakeholders, and I had obviously extensive technical background. So I knew that we could do this. I was also like 9 years working with vendors when the last 9 years spent probably 60 vendors I work with creating learning. And there's nothing more irritating than talking to an instructional designer and asking whether they can do something. And they say, well, I don't know if to talk to the developer because all I have is like the templatized way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can do it or not. You can't have mindset of problem solving if you're kind of like templatized with the tools and the developer is going to create it at somewhere, some point.
That is excellent. Thank you so much for wrapping it back around to that problem solving thinking. How would you suggest like an ID newbie practice that kind of thinking?
I think, again, if you look at Kathy Moore's what I call obstacalities, it's a made-up word. It's like the alternative fact thing. there's no dictionary that has it, but I call these obstacalities. So what holds you back from doing it today? So one is the environment, one is knowledge, one is skills, and one is motivation. So if you spread this out, are you motivated to learn more about it? If you are, there's ways to get that knowledge. There are good books about it, about critical thinking. A lot of people that you should follow, social media, where's L&D going? Is if you start out now as an instructional designer and you say, let's say in 5 years, I'm going to be on top of my game, you have to know where you're going. It's famous where the puck goes, not where the puck is today. Mm-hmm. If you're learning for today's world, in 5 years, I don't know, percentage would be probably half of the things could be obsolete by then. So you have to make sure that you're learning the way that you can use that afterwards in your five and timing. So that's one thing. Definitely follow people, find those books, and learn about the instructional design, the science of learning. There is so much research out there, and I don't expect anyone to dig in and pull up all the research, body of research out there. What I expect them to do from my team, for example, is to learn about the evidence-based learning methods. And in that way, they can make decisions based on science and not gut feelings. Because oftentimes you run into this, it makes sense, so I'll use it. And then you run into these learning styles and the 20% things we see, remember, and all these things that somehow, some way made it to our world and it just keep bubbling up and it's just not true.
Yeah. Excellent advice. Thank you. So what have been some benefits that the organizations that you worked with have seen from the solutions that you guys implemented?
So in the first case, there's always the stakeholders part and there's always the end user part. And unfortunately, it doesn't matter how much you know about science and learning and what in theory ideally should happen in the world, it's always kind of skewed. You have to have a buy-in from your stakeholders. You have to please the stakeholders in even just to get your thing out. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes hard to convince them So there's always a compromise to make sure that it works, it's sound, but at the same time, effective and not resource demanding. Mm-hmm. So with this approach of time frame and cost that we did was absolutely pleasing, obviously, for the stakeholders, and they loved the story. Then we rolled it out and we were looking at enrollment rate, and they put it on. They liked it so much outside even the organization when we started rolling it out that they wanted to put on the onboarding side and all that. So it popped up a lot of places. At the end, it helped people to drive to this new site, but stakeholders also realized that they need to fix the site itself, getting a little more upgrade to it. So it would be easier at that point to enroll and rather than just driving them. But what our goal was to get people excited about this and drive, that helped. And you can measure that based on the percentage. In the other case, it was, I think, a huge success because ultimately the goal was not to disrupt a customer service, you know, level of service. So customers should not see at all that we're going through this huge change of moving one billing system to another.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked the solution because it wasn't extra time off the phone somewhere sitting in a learning bubble. It was real time, and they used it afterwards and then they dropped it. So the solution was quick. The solution was user friendly because it did what it had to, but nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have to log in, register and all that. It was so both of them went very well at the end.
Awesome. Awesome. And I love those side benefits, particularly with that. Oh, well, now they're looking at the website and now they're taking this and putting it other places. That's awesome to hear about and to think about when you're thinking about the solution that you're going to build. And sort of related to that, when you think about, and I believe in action mapping, this is sort of part of the action mapping process, but when you think about metrics for that you're going to collect and build, how do you think about measuring the success of a project sort of holistically for you as well as for the stakeholders?
In the action mapping, we start with just establishing what the goal is or what the business problem is. And that oftentimes is not easy. It sounds easy, but it's not. So there are times when they say, well, we just want more engaging learning. Or they say, we don't really have anything tangible, but we think we should do X. Or we don't see employee engagement, so we want to make it shorter, or whatever those things are. And nothing really anything to do with a real tangible business. So there's a lot of layers down there asking, so tell me more about it. And one of the ways to do that is asking them, how do you know that there's a problem? So what do you see? What are the symptoms that you see today? And then it starts because they start peeling the onion layers and tell you exact things like, well, it's because when I'm going to meetings, I mentioned this, I don't know, strategy, like nobody raises their hand that they know about it and they should, things like that. And then once you get to that layer, then we can ask and figure out, okay, what would be an ideal solution? And they say, well, at least 10 people should know out of 20 or whatever. That would be already a good way. So we kind of figure out what and how we're going to look at the results and then ask about, okay, now how would you want to go there? What holds people back from doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And then get into the details of audience, et cetera.
Yeah, okay. So the metrics pop up as you're having the conversation. You start to think about, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'd like to see, and those things sort of become the metrics.
Yeah, and I think one of the hardest thing is when they say we need an awareness training.
Right, gosh.
People are not aware. And again, like I love Kathy Miller's approach, and I use this example to everywhere and every time, doesn't matter what level of leadership we're talking to. And just a simple ask them, I give them the scenario that Jolt and Christine are doing the same job. They're sitting in the same office, cubes or whatever, next to each other. And Christine is aware and I'm not. So where do you see the difference in their work performance?
Mm.
And that changes completely the situation because now they're not talking about awareness level, but they say, oh, they're not really different. But when they make this decision or whatever, that it's like, okay, now what decision is that? And then we get into the details that they're actually doing something. It's not visible. These are decisions. These are conversations with the client, for example, or whatever that is. And now we have a tangible thing to go with.
Nice. Excellent. Excellent. So, Jolt, what would you say would be some major takeaways that newbie IDs could take from the solutions that you discussed today? What are some things that they, sound bites that they can take back into their own work?
I think the number one thing for instructional design is instructional design is not about arranging content. That's how I started, and I got excited when I had everything approved and all I need is a deck and make it exciting. That's great. It's one of those creative tingles and what can I do with all this? But in real life, it's not really happening anymore. You're not going to get the old Eddie waterfall of everything is approved and here's your deck and make great things out of it. The business is flying much faster and exploring much faster, changing much faster so that L&D can follow this the old way. So I think what's important is figuring out the context rather than the content side of it. And in approaching it, how and what the business solution is going to be measured, what are the actions that people need to take? So action mapping is, I would definitely recommend just to look at, even if you don't follow every little step of how Kathy Moore is going to lay out, but just thinking about those different assets is great. We use, for example, cards here at PDG or iWork. Each obstacle has a little card, physically card, and I give it to the audience. And then they can just figure out, okay, what kind of problem do you think this is? And it starts a conversation. So action mapping is number one. Number two is tools. So there's a lot of tools out there today that you can use to create learning. It used to be a divide between instructional designers who just write content and design and the developers, you know, the geeks with Flash, and they were like the, you can't touch them, give them Coke and pizza. They deliver something wonderful, but don't ask them about the science of learning because they don't care about it much. So that kind of merged into, can you help me with the problem? So if you set up as an instructional designer today, my suggestion is that look at things from a problem perspective, a problem solver perspective, rather than content perspective that you arrange things around. And I think these two, action mapping and problem solving, kind of go hand in hand. But whatever tools you're using, it's always think about the business problem before, during training, and after training, rather than just this 15-minute awareness piece that, you're creating. It has to go somewhere. There's real people taking that with real life, real problems with their managers. There's all these contexts they need to know how it's working rather than just the learning part itself.
Fantastic. Jolt, thank you so much for coming on the show and giving such excellent examples. And last but not least, I want to know, where can people catch up with you?
So if you go to my blog, it's Rabbit or Rag, we can put it on the side. It's kind of hard to spell because it's half Hungarian, half English, which is just my basically my brain. But you'll find a lot of things there in three categories. One is the engagement and motivation. Two is a lot of about storyline and JavaScript, just simple things that make it a lot more interactive. And then three is about just thinking about game thinking and how game thinking helps you to focus on actions and action mapping. So that's one. And obviously, if you want to connect with me on Twitter or LinkedIn, I'm happy to do that. I have a session at the ATD ICE conference in Atlanta in May. It's going to be an escape the room type of exciting thing, a little bit of a mixture of virtual reality or actually augmented reality in that. And then if everything goes well by May, I also have a book out there. I don't know exactly the title yet, but we do have a working title, and that's called The Last ID on Earth. So that kind of tells you what it's about.
Nice. Awesome. Awesome. I will pick up your book myself, and I encourage everybody else to. And again, just thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I enjoy the other pieces, so I hope that's worth listening to. And at least there's one takeaway that you do follow up immediately after within 7 days.
As Jolt promised, both of those examples were really, really good and really instructive. In both cases, through asking targeted questions and building relationships, he was able to turn the common request of, we need a training, into, we actually need this other thing. He talked about how focusing on the context, rather than the content, allowed him the leeway to ask those questions and to get to his eventual solutions. So that's a great takeaway. Focus on the context first, not the content. He mentioned Kathy Moore's action mapping as his methodology of choice, which I've certainly blogged about before, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's a really amazing process, and I think she does an amazing job of making it an actionable process, even for the newbie ID. You might need to modify it a bit for your org or your position, but whatever your individual case, I think you'll find that there are bits that you can use. I also liked Jolt's mention of cards, actual physical items for what he called the obstacalities that he uses in his conversations. That sounds like a really helpful aid and maybe an idea you can steal for your own practice. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. You can reach out to Jolt on Twitter. He's at RabbitOReg. Links to his Twitter and his website will be in the show notes. And as always, you can reach out to me. I'm at AnthChris on Twitter. Or you can shoot me an email at Kristen@DearInstructionalDesigner.com. If you've got some time, I would love it if you'd leave a rating and review on iTunes. It's super helpful to let other people know about the show and let me know how I'm doing. You can learn more about how on DearInstructionalDesigner.com. Thanks so much for listening, and take care.